I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. We are in Smokestack Studio in Nashville, Tennessee. And I'm with Tyler Armstrong of the band Feel. Hey, man.
What's up?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
So it's funny. We were doing a rig rundown on Heart like a week ago, and your producer was there.
Yes.
He said, hey, man, I got this great band I'm recording. You should check them out. And I said, oh, I know these guys. They're great. I've been following you for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Paul's great. Heart's great. I grew up loving Heart, so working with Paul, that's just an extra treat.
Right.
Stories and all that kind of stuff, but yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, I like that you guys are a proper rock band, you know?
Thanks, man. Yeah, we there's kind of a thing going on with bands like us, like kind of a younger generation. I say we're unlocking nostalgia for an older generation, and we're creating it for a younger.
So there you go. That's
kind of where we sit right
now. Those are your demographics.
Yeah, it seems to be right now. It's pretty cool.
Hey, okay, so tell me about that.
Okay, well, first
off, is that what it looks like?
It is. First off, it's not mine. it's not mine. Gibson Certified Vintage. Gibson is starting to collect vintage guitars now.
Oh, sure. And, we just actually did a little piece on that at Premier Guitar.
Yeah. So they've been super kind to me. And Mitch, the guy who runs it, said, hey, come check out some guitars and let me know what you might want to use in the studio. So there's a few that I've got here I can talk about in a bit. But yeah, this is a genuine, all original Bad Boy 1959 Flying V. And I've played about five of them out of the 81. That they made with during that period, and this is by far the best. They just have a mid-range that punches out in a very unique way. It's not a Les Paul, it's not 335, it's not an SG. It sits in its own world, and I used it today for a track, and everyone just was like, whoa. They hold up to the lore, man. It's an honor to play one, and yeah, man, it's cool.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough one to give back, I imagine. Yeah,
no joke.
But but you got to give it back, man.
Well, we'll see what happens.
Right. So it's going to take a lot of album sales to cover that thing.
Yeah, well, I also say I'm pretty fast. So there's that, too. All those years of baseball are helping out with that. But yeah, man, it's cool. There's not very many of them, but they have that unique tone that no other solid body electric has, man.
Oh, God,
They're fantastic. And the new ones that that Gibson is reissuing with the Murphy Lab, et cetera, you know, they're great, too. There's always just that little bit when, I mean, it's almost a 70-year-old guitar. That adds to it.
But, sure.
Yeah, man, it's a dream. It's every guitarist's dream to be able to play one, and I'm lucky enough that they're let me use it for a bit.
Yeah, God. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
okay.
No doubt.
Well, let's look at what's next. What else you got going on?
Well, I'll just start down the line.
Sure. You got a lot of stuff here. That's good.
Yeah. So basically,
now when you're tracking right now, so you've got everything. But when
much.
You guys are touring, how many do you usually carry?
Right now I'll fill up this vault, and then I will have a couple acoustics and cases.
Okay.
So this is pretty similar to a lot of the stuff I bring out. Not exactly, but I'll just start down the line and talk about the ones I got some stories and stuff.
Sure.
And, I'm going to start off by saying I have a very blessed life that, one, I live in the Midwest, so a lot of guitars pop up from farmers and churches and things like that. And you can get good deals. You're always honest with them.
Yeah.
But they tend to they judge you by their character. So I say that by saying I have a lot of old guitars. I don't have the wallet for them. It's just worked out that way.
Sure.
It's been a lot of trading and selling in the process. So all that to say, this is a super messed up, you might say, 1953 Fender Telecaster. It's one of my favorites, not because of Keith or anything, but I do keep it in open G for a couple songs live.
Oh, cool.
It's the one that kind of responds best to that. Long story short with this, my buddy in Northern Illinois said, hey, I know a guy who's got a Blackguard, but it's all sorts of messed up. The neck was warped and everything. I showed up. He was not lying. It was super messed up. But I bought it from him, and we got it working.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we heat treated the neck, and It's so amazing,
like,
man.
Right there, like somebody had taken a little wood out
there. Yeah, they kind of like did the Jeff Beck thing. They contoured the back and contoured
like
the arm.
I like it.
It's cool, man. It doesn't dig into my forearm.
And the thing cool. is, like, you could never do that yourself.
No.
To an old guitar, but if somebody else does it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no harm,
yeah,
no foul.
And so many of these things I have, you know, they're player grade, as we call them. So I can take them out, and they're not... I can play them.
Yeah, one more ding is not going to make any difference.
Yeah, you know, that's the whole point of these guitars. It's a cliche, but man, we got to play them, right?
Yeah.
And there are pieces of history too, so we should respect them in that way. But they're made to be played.
The pickups? Mm-hmm. Do you know if those are the original ones?
Or? So yeah, this is original. All of this under here is cool. I have the original neck pickup. My buddy. Michael Pinto, he plays with Chris Stapleton. He's a really good friend of mine. He hooked me up with this neck pickup because the one I had kind of like degaussed a little bit, the been like demagnetized slightly, so
sure.
It wasn't very strong. So I don't even remember what he gave me, but I put it in and it sounded good, so I didn't really worry about it. But yeah, all of it's pretty much electronics are original. All this, it's a Tadio Gomez signed neck. It's got one of my favorite profiles ever, but. It's super messed up. The neck is still pretty warped. The action's high. It hangs off the board, but
perfect.
I make it work, man. I make it work. You know.
Perfect.
So yeah, man. It's a cool guitar. So
isn't that weird on old tellies? Some of them, the strings really do just come off the board.
Oh man, I mean,
like, my old 69 is totally I had to get a new neck. It just did not. Yeah.
Yeah, I could probably fix it a little bit if I decided to plane the board and get it a little straighter, but it just looks so cool. I just can't. I'll be a little aesthetically pleasing for myself with that.
Sure.
Yeah,
if it ain't broke.
Yeah. It's on its way.
Semi-broke.
Yeah, I know, for real. But yeah, that's a cool one, man.
Okay.
I'm blessed to have that for
cool.
sure.
Cool. And that's so lives in G.
Yeah, that's open G. I'll track it sometimes not, but I haven't really used it on this... record. I don't know if I have it all. This one I just got back from my tech. His name is Pete Pinkston, and he's great from a refret. And it's it's just a refin, kind of weird. It's a 65 Strat.
Oh, great.
It's kind of got a little bit of a thinner neck than a lot of them do in that era. Kind of going into 66, they started to get a little thinner. But this is an awesome guitar. It came to me pretty simply through a friend, and it's great. It sounds amazing.
Hey, let's hear that thing a little
okay.
bit.
Let's get it going.
Yeah, I want to hear those single coils just
They're
hung.
Great, man. Yeah, exactly.
I want to hear that buzz.
We'll see if we're in tune. Probably enough.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a pretty aggressive Strat.
Yeah.
But it can do all the stuff.
Yeah, that's great.
Sounds like a Strat.
Yeah, totally. You know? That's great.
You know, I find that older guitars, there's a saying that a lot of people say, like, that these old guitars sound like records. And that's what we're all going for. So,
yeah.
And I love new guitars. I have quite a few of them as well, but there's something about an old Strat that it's just not as hard to get those tones you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally hear that. Okay, I love so far.
Yeah, man.
Love them all.
I'll blaze through these. So this was built for me as a gift from a really great builder around St. Louis named Pete Buncher. He has Buncher guitars. It's kind of based off of a Les Paul Jr. type.
Yeah.
But it's just a little different. It's a little bit more aggressive and warm. But yeah, it's just an awesome guitar. This is the junior I take out on the road.
Okay.
I have a couple old ones, but this is the one I take, and I love it so much. And more often than not, this is the one that gets people's attention because it's so kind of far out looking. It's all wood appointments and
I love
everything,
that.
Man.
It's kind of like a Salvador Dali Junior.
It is, kind of, yeah.
Like it's dripping.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of a lot of different designs and stuff. So he did a really good job of putting those together and... you know, making it unique, and the headstock is sick.
Yeah,
I've never seen a headstock quite like that, and it's got a volute. We were just talking about those earlier, and that's a cool volute.
Perry loves a volute.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
He's a neck breaker. He loves volutes.
So we'll stay on the the P90 train.
Sure.
This is a cool guitar. So it's, you know, you look at it, it's basically an Epiphone Coronet. It's the same thing an Epiphone would be, but it's a long story short. In the late 50s, when Gibson came out with the Carina guitars, the Explorer and the Flying V, they weren't able to sell very many. They couldn't market it as well as they thought they were going to be able to. They kind of wanted like a guitar for the future, but it just didn't work out well for them at the time. But there was a store in East St. Louis, Illinois, not Missouri, called Sonny Shields Music, who sold a ton of them. That's where Albert King's came from.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of ones that have popped up. I heard there's about 15 of the 81 were sold from there. And so basically, CMI, who is distribution for Gibson Valco Supra, was like, we want to reward you for selling so many. So there had already been Valco and Supra branded, or guitars that were branded as Dwight, which was the name of the store owner, but they made 73 of these. So it's an Epiphone Coronet, but it's technically a Dwight Coronet.
Wow.
Yeah, so they pop up somewhat often in St. Louis because it's from that area, but this is the earliest one I've come across. You just don't really come across them.
Wow.
The unique feature on this, it doesn't have a tone pot. It has a tone switch, so it's on or off. On or off.
Really?
So there's a couple people who are known to play them, like Mick Rouse, Bad Company, and I don't know if he played in Bad Company, but definitely in Mott, the Hoople. But the biggest one that everyone talks about is Steve Marriott.
Huh.
The Rock and the Fillmore guitar was a Dwight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you can see it. And then also you can see his Dwight pickguard, because it has a D and not an E. He stuck it on a 59 Junior. Later on, you can see pictures with that.
Oh, really?
So it's it's a killer guitar. I mean, it's I've always thought they're a little goofy looking, but like they're cool and like they just rock. That's what they do. It's straight rocking the Fillmore, man.
Well, so the on off.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Wow. So is the Epiphone version on off as well, or is
no.
that just a Dwight?
Mm-mm. Just the Dwights. Not all of the Dwights are like that either.
That is such an odd thing to do.
These guitars were originally through the store for students. They would have these student guitar programs, and you could do basically a rent-to-own sort of deal.
Yeah,
You can look them up. There's a couple really cool pictures. They're in black and white in the early 60s. So this is a 62.
Hey,
I shouldn't mention that.
I know you don't have a strap on that, but I got to hear that on-off switch.
I can hold it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like what most people might call like the woman tone.
Okay.
Like that sort of thing-ish. But it's cool. Well, we'll see if I'm in tune, man. Close enough.
Close enough.
So that's full on. That's what's off.
Wow.
It's pretty cool,
that
really.
That is cool, yeah.
I don't know how much you can use it, but it's tight.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's a strange decision, right?
Because, yeah, well, I don't know why they did it, but
yeah, with
they
one
did.
Pickup, you kind of want to take a little bit of that tone down.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's because they knew they were going to be student guitars, and like I said, there's those pictures of all the students with them.
Oh, really?
That's really cool. I have no idea, but when you're talking about rocking the Fillmore and stuff, when you do that.
Yeah.
It's that tone for sure, man.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
that's cool.
Yeah, dude.
Never seen that before. I love it.
All right. So this one's maybe a little more familiar. This is a guitar I used a lot so far on the record and a lot live. It's a 1964 SG. It's got a heel repair, it's got all my buckle rash and stuff, it's got a gouge and all that, but it's all original underneath. I love
the electric tape, electrician tape.
Yeah, well,
there.
So when they did the heel repair, they made the brake angles not that done that well. So
it catches?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've talked to my tech about, we should just do another neck reset someday and fix it.
Oh, dude, you fixed it. That works.
that's the money saver.
Yeah, that's good.
That's a Dollar Tree repair right
there. Right, yeah, it totally works.
But I actually got this. I haven't bought a lot of guitars from stores, but I did get this from Elliot Michael at Rumble Seat here in town.
Oh, okay.
Probably 6 years ago. My really good friend Tobin Dale worked there for a while, and he plays with Tuck Smith, if you've heard of Tuck, and like Ray Wiley Hubbard and stuff like that. But anyhow, he hooked me up with this, and it's a bad boy.
Yeah, that's
it's
great.
It's a bad boy, man.
Yeah, very cool.
Cool, man. We'll keep going.
Yeah, you got stuff.
We'll get around them.
Yeah. Seen you play this one a lot.
Yeah.
So this seems like your number one-ish.
It has been. I tell people when they ask what's my favorite, like it's hard to say, you know, that cliche, all your babies, but I can do pretty much anything with our kind of gig with this.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of different guitars for different tones. Thankfully, people claim that they can hear the difference. I don't know. Maybe it's just for my own cure for boredom, but and different tunings and stuff. But this guitar can pretty much do it. And I've had it for a bit, probably 5 or so years, and it sounds great. There's a lot of these 68. This is a 69 Les Paul custom, and there's a lot of these out there, and I've played a lot of them. But this is by far the best one. It's got my favorite neck shape pretty much ever on a Gibson. It's pretty close to like that early 60. If you play a Burst or a 335, it's not huge. It's not like super skinny.
Now, did they come with were those the fretless wonders that had the tiny?
Yeah. They did that up until like 75 or 76.
Yeah.
And this has been refretted twice since I've gotten it. I just love it. It does it. I'll play it because I love it so much. A little out of tune. Set a tune, but it sounds like a Les Paul.
No, it sounds great. Yeah. Les Pauls often are out of tune.
Yeah. There we go. But
that's great. So, do you know, is that the all mahogany model? I know.
No,
when did they start putting the cap on them?
In 68.
Oh, really?
Yep, in 68. So you can actually see it there. There's that maple cap right there.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, the 50s Les Pauls, that's why they have a really unique thing. It's because they're all mahogany. Mm. But so, you know, these are. A lot of people will say this is the closest thing you can get to a Burst while still being a Les Paul.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's brighter.
Yeah, yeah. They really are. Yeah. They cut through in a different way.
Yeah.
They roll off in a different way. They clean up in a different way. I've played a lot of Bursts. I've probably played 40 or 50 of them, and this really stands up to most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm
the Black Burst. Yeah.
Heck yeah, dude. Yeah, man. Yeah, it's great. I'll never get rid of this guitar.
Yeah, sure. Hey, that is very you. That's great, man.
Thanks, man. All right, what
else?
Okay,
love it.
Well, we were just talking about Explorers before we started rolling tape.
Well, yeah. I mean, you got a V here. You kind of have to have the Explorer.
So this isn't as old. My friend Mark Quinn made me the long-term custodian of this guitar. Graciously, so this is a really early 76.
It's, oh, cool.
So on the earliest of those, you get it says limited edition. It starts with a 00 serial.
Oh, okay.
So this is not one like the Edge loves these guitars. He likes ones with like big fat necks. So a lot of people like the big ones.
Yeah.
This one's really not a very big neck, and I like that a little bit more. But yeah, it's a great guitar. I use this live for sure in a couple tunes, and hasn't got a lot of use in the studio. On disco, but it's great.
That is a rock and roll machine.
Oh yeah, they're rock and roll and nothing but, man.
Do you know, are those pickups both stocked, you know?
So this one is stocked. These came with like, they're called tarbacks. They're actually ceramic pickups.
Sure, right.
And this one is not. My friend had changed it a while back and we changed it to an older pickup.
Yeah.
It's just an older humbucker and it sounds real good.
Right, and you did the same fix.
Yeah, I guess I have a problem.
Yeah.
Turns out I have a problem.
Yeah, well, hey man, you kind of lean into that pick pretty hard.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, yeah. With some of the stuff you get a little aggressive, and you know, you gotta show them what's up.
Right, that's part of the deal.
I've got a friend who says you gotta tell them what time it is. That's what it is. So that's a cool one.
Yeah, that is very cool.
So we're a rock band, but we have like a lot of different sides. So we're like. We say we're a rock band in the truest form, or a lot of dynamics, a lot of up and downs. We have a lot of acoustic music and stuff.
Yeah, I dig that.
Thanks, man.
I love that.
So with that said, we're also, I do a lot of 12-string stuff. What's this in? It's in standard right now, but I use this for a couple tunes in Open G Live as well. So it's a Rickenbacker 660-12, and the difference between this and like a regular Rickenbacker is that a regular Rickenbacker is the nut width is really, really small. It's really, really skinny. It's kind of hard. It gets clunky down here, and it's just not very comfortable with the 12 string, in my opinion. So in the 90s, they came out with this model. Tom Petty and Mike Campbell talked to him and said, hey, can we widen that nut? So I'm pretty sure it's 1 3/4.
Oh.
So it's like getting closer to like your what a pre-war Martin would be.
Yeah.
So it's real easy to fret down here, and they sound real good too.
I love that Tom Petty and Mike Campbell were the guys to get him to do it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Rickenbacker doesn't really do much for like working with a bunch of artists.
Yeah.
But you can't really say no to those guys.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah, right.
But it sounds good.
Oh, that's great.
Does that thing,
sure.
But you can also just and I can play it.
Yeah,
I can play it. So
yeah, best of
it all works
all.
Out. I don't even care if it sounds good as long as I can play it. So yeah, we do that, and we kind of dig being able to have those different dynamics, and we're not just a balls to the wall band all the time. We're not just a super laid back band, but
right.
You know, we kind of do.
Yeah.
We like to think all of it. I don't know.
Yeah, and I love that to be able to do that. I mean, because there's only four guys on stage, right? So
yeah, right,
to be able
right.
to get, you got to introduce some variety. Otherwise, just all.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you know. You know, we think about a lot of bands in the we're just influenced by so much music, whether it's British rock or I often say my favorite artist is Joni Mitchell, so there's her and people like Nick Drake and Jackson Browne and CSN. It's like, why not just throw it all in there? And
right.
I think something that a lot of new music is missing or just doesn't have the elements of is if you went to a Led Zeppelin concert or a CSN or a Humble Pie or whoever back in the day, these harder, heavier bands, they always had an acoustic set.
Yeah.
They always had dynamic songs that went up and down. It was almost like you were listening to a concept record live.
Right, yeah.
And, so that's kind of what we like because, you know, there's only a few bands who can do it like that. Like AC/DC, they can do it like that for 50 years.
Yeah.
And it works.
Right.
But, you know, you kind of need a... You need to give your ears a break and your soul and spirit and your energy a break too, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, and it seems like if you put something kind of sweet and delicate next to something big and angry, the big and angry looks bigger and angrier.
That's true.
And the delicate looks more delicate, you
well,
know?
Yeah, not to get like all hippy-dippy.
Oh, let's get it, let's do it.
But,
yeah, right, you're talking about language, man.
It's a real life thing that, you know, ups and downs of life, and like not every day is a good day. Yeah. Well, I always say, not every day is a good day, there's just less good days, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's just a mindset, but, you know, it's just a human emotion.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, I always say that's why people love the Beatles so much, because you had the stoic one, the relatively emotional one, you had the one who always talked about love, and you liked the one who liked the party. That's like one person and four people.
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
So it's kind of like that, but just our music, like
yeah,
you know what I mean,
right? You know, and you're interested in mentioning AC/DC. When AC/DC does a breakdown, or when they bring it down dynamically, just the bass drops out.
Yeah,
you know, he'll quit and everything else just stays there, and then it comes like that is their
but then when
trick.
It comes back in, oh. when Cliff or whatever
oh.
comes back in, it's like
thunder,
we're
man.
Back, we're
yeah.
back, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess speaking of AC/DC too, that was a weird segue.
Oh, you got Malcolm over there, right?
Yeah, I just got this. It's worth showing that this bridge pickup is giving me trouble, so I can't play it. But I just got this.
Oh, cool!
It showed up when we were in the studio. It's a '63 Gretsch Duojet.
So that is the Malcolm one, right?
Yes. Yeah, so
anybody took out that pickup?
Yep, and all of this. So his is a Jet Firebird, just meaning that it's red.
Yeah.
That's the only difference, but these guitars are so cool. I wish I could show it. Like I said, this is being a little weird, but it's my new bestie, so that's why I'm showing
it. Oh, that's
everybody.
Great. I love it.
I love it so much.
Yeah, Malcolm like stripped everything, right?
Yeah, stripped. Eventually these came out. He had two of these. He had a humbucker in the middle at one point, but then I think he just went Eddie Van Halen with it and just
yeah.
went. And it makes a difference, man, because if you think about it, this is a tone switch that has two like fat caps in it.
Yeah.
This is a pickup selector. This is a master volume, and then your volumes for each of those, and that's just a mute. Yeah. I don't really know why we need that.
That'll get you in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Or it can save you.
Yeah, right.
It can save you. I always say the best thing about being a guitarist is we have a volume knob to turn down.
Wait a minute, they go down?
Yeah, well, yeah. I'm still trying to find that trick. But yeah, if you just have it straight out, like, it's just pure pickup, man.
Yeah, and, I get it. Yeah, because cool. Those are all kind of tone suckers. So yeah, that's why he took them all out.
And why these are cool, too, is that they're technically like semi-hollow. And
right.
You know, that's not a block of wood. That's some wood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why that's cool.
Okay, that is cool.
Somewhat kind of on the P90 thing again. I've had this guitar for a while, too.
Is that a 69 or a 59?
It's a 59, yep. Yeah. It's a 59. And there is a nerdy stuff, but like getting into this serial range, the 923 to 925s are my favorite for some reason. I think they all came from the same tree.
Strangely specific.
Well, I've played, so this one is, I don't know if I should say, who cares? It's 820, but I've played 823, 825, 829 as well.
Wow, man, you're going full Rain Man on us.
Well, nice. We got to watch Oprah later or whatever.
Right. You almost have a Wapner, right.
But, yeah. But no, it just so happened to be people reached out and it's like, hey, I have one. And like one buddy said he had 829 or whatever. I was like, I should ask what people got. And then I just ended up playing these guitars eventually. And they all feel exactly the same and sound exactly the same.
Really?
So all old guitars, all guitars in general sound different. But these ones don't in that range. But it's the best double cut junior I've played. And what I like about double cuts over single cuts from time to time, because I have old 57 single cut as well. These are like mellow. You can turn them down and... You know, the single cut thing, there's a lot of guys who played it, but you instantly go to Mississippi Queen tone. That's
sure.
Like really what they do for me. But you can really play with these. They're a little bit more like, it's junior for a reason. It's like the kid who doesn't want to upset mom. But when you go like that, they're the one that's causing all the trouble.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah, and I love that little noble battle scar up there.
I wish I had a story, but I don't.
Luckily,
the headstock didn't break. But
I'm thinking it was like a crash cymbal.
I've said the same thing.
Like, oh, really?
Like that, or like fell like right on a coffee table. But probably was that, man. You're right. Yeah. But it's got a lot of cherry still left in it. And
it's funny, I've got a 1960, and I have no idea what the serial number is on it, but...
It's got a real thin neck one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, so it's probably later 60, but, man, they're usually always great. There's not a lot of duds when it comes to these juniors, because there's not a lot to go wrong. It's
right.
Just that the wood's good, and there you go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Those were, you know, a student model.
Yes.
And they're just so great for, you know, the simplicity, I guess.
Yeah, man. Yeah, so this next guitar I have not used at all on the record. It's not mine. It belongs to a friend of mine who became a friend because of who his dad was. I'm from Springfield, Illinois. And Springfield, people probably wouldn't know it, but it has a really rich history in music. Like somebody like Barrett Deems, who played with Louis Armstrong on drums and stuff. He's from Springfield, but... it has a rich history of like the local scene, in my opinion. Oh. And I have always said that between Chicago and Nashville, like it seems like everybody came to Springfield, like the talent or something. So growing up there was cool. And when I started to play guitar, I learned about a guy named Scott Young, and he was just a legend in our town. And this guitar was lost for a while, but then they found it, and it's just. I don't really have much to say about it except that I'm proud of Springfield and it's cool to be able to use it. And I got it refretted for him. And
oh, cool.
It's just showing it. So shout out to all my Springfield people.
Yeah, that's cool.
So it's also cool to see these two side by side.
Right.
Because this is I should have mentioned the year again. This is a 75. So kind of early-ish on and they're reissued. And this is the one that would have made people want or Gibson to make this guitar again. So you've got a 59 and a 75, and they're not too different. They sound different. The price point's quite different.
That's the biggest difference.
But they're as cool as they get, man. Like I just feel good doing this.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, how could you not?
Yeah, man. The band could stop right now, and I'd feel good about that. So these next two are a couple that Gibson Certified brought out, too. This is a 63 Casino. Cool. Very similar to the 330, but again, I think they sound different for some reason. I couldn't tell you why. But this is like the Paul McCartney.
Yeah. You know, Bukovac swears that the Casino is way better than the 330.
I haven't heard him say that, but I agree. They sound different. I think they're much warmer and even acoustically.
Yeah, acoustically they're cool.
You know, there's some 70s Takamines that aren't that loud.
Right.
You
know what I mean? No kidding.
They're great. And even just...
Yeah.
Acoustically, that's where it's at, man.
Yeah, that's...
So I use this a little bit today, and it's cool, man. It doesn't get cooler than, like, early Epiphone.
Oh, yeah, man. And to have all those flavors here while you're making a record, that's great.
Yeah, man. It's, like I said, I'm blessed to have it. My parents, when I first started playing, they bought me a Squire Strat, the Strat Pack, they used to call it, with a little amp and stuff.
Sure.
I still have that. And then they did buy me my first, real guitar, if you want to call it that. It was a 2006 Les Paul Studio that was secondhand and all of that. And, man, I could have died. My parents have been so supportive in the past. But those are the two things they bought me. So after that, I just had to, I wanted guitars, but I had to figure out how. So it was either through gigs or trading pedals, selling pedals or whatever, all of that. So with all of that said, that's led to me being able to have a lot of guitars, meeting people who have guitars, learning about the history of it. I'm a history junkie. So guitars, happens to be my passion with music, but it's also my passion with history. So they work together in that way. But yeah, I'm blessed to have all these flavors and all the amps and stuff because they do sound different. And, a lot of people say, well, they won't tell it in the mix. It's like, yeah, but you can tell if you have three bad guitars in a mix.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell that. So it's cool to be able to do it. I think I drive Paul and his engineer Zach and Brendan kind of crazy how many different tones I'm trying to get. But I don't know. I think there's something cool about bringing out a bunch of guitars.
Oh, man, absolutely.
Hendrix known for the Strat, Page is known for Les Paul. All these dudes, known for their one guitar. But I always thought it was cool when, someone like Mick Rouse brought out a Strat, a Flying V, a Junior, and a Burst. You can hear the differences, you know.
Well, even Jimmy Page, his Telecaster probably sold more Les Pauls than
that's what they say, man. That first album.
I don't think there's a Gibson on that first album. I think
there's not. The only Gibson's an acoustic.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, the second album starts to use the Les Paul a lot. That's what we can get on thing with them. But but yeah, man, so here's another one. This is a this is another bad boy.
Is that a 355?
So it's a 355 from 1959, and it's a mono, exactly. Yeah. So Gibson just released the Keith Richards reissue with the Mercury Lab, and it's a black, and it's mono, and they're just tremendously rare, and more often than not, sound amazing. They're known as, burst killers, because they're just, they're up there with the burst as far as tones, and, I mean, this one sounds great. I'll plug it in. I use this a bunch today. I'm trying to make it mine too, but I can't do that. I might have to ask somebody else to help me out with that. But where are we at? Sounds great, man. They're just alive, and they're so sweet while also being able to really punch out.
Sure.
They do a unique thing that no other guitar does, man. Even with that ebony board, does make a difference from a 335's rosewood. Just the slightest things. Yeah. Those are the things you can't tell in the mix. But
you
can tell them when I'm sitting here, you know.
So it's great. What strings are you using?
So I don't know what they've got on these, but I'm usually just using a 10 to 46 or a 10 to 48. I'm with Ernie Ball for like my electric strings.
Yeah.
I like to use a 10 to 48 because it gives a little, just a little bit extra on the low end. Yeah, it's, you're able to just dig in a little more. I don't know if it's tonally it's changing too much, but I've always just used 10s. I tried 11s for a second, and just with the kind of stuff we're doing, it just tends to work out.
Sure.
With the 10s, and you know, it just works out. Yeah. That's what those guitars are made for.
Yeah.
But it's weird to think too, all these guitars came with flat wounds originally.
Right, but, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the wound G, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we had some other ideas.
yeah. Okay, tell me about this thing.
Yeah, man. So I was talking about Gibson Certified Vintage earlier and working with them and them bringing some guitars and stuff. And I told Mitch, the dude who runs it, I was like, man, my dream guitar is a EDS 1275, but not the ones they brought in the 60s and the 70s, the original ones. From the 50s,
they're
and the early 60s,
right?
Basically, and they're maple back and side, spruce top. It's essentially a big, huge acoustic with, it's like a 3035, let's say, with a solid top and four two sets of PAF pickups and all that. And they sound insane. They're impractical. They have massive cases. I don't know how anyone could travel with it. And but they are amazing.
Yeah.
It's as good as it gets for. I can show you some too.
Yeah, let's hear this thing.
Let's just rock with it.
Yeah.
Pretty good for a guitar meant for I have no idea what, but
yeah.
Something.
Let's hear that top neck. I want to hear that.
Pretty unique sounding.
Right.
They're very cool, man, very rare.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the neatest. I think it's the coolest guitar I've ever seen in my life.
See, I wonder if I could buy just this part. Could you sell them separately?
Yeah, it would be great if they reissued it because it's just spruce top, maple back and side, six strings.
Right.
It sounds great, too.
It's such a cool idea for a guitar.
And shouldn't feedback with a solid top, man? We could play them on stage.
Okay, yeah. You know? Gibson, it's in your court.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make that happen.
I'm trying to get this one.
Yeah,
this
You're
trying to make this mine someday.
You have to save a while for that one.
Yes, sell everything.
Yeah,
both kidneys.
Both kidneys. Yes. You won't need them.
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, and also talking about the gentler side of feel. Why don't we look at some of your acoustics?
Sounds good. Okay, so from about the turn of the century, the 20th. Century and the 21st.
Yeah, which century are you talking about?
So from about 1900 to 1945, there were these two brothers with the last name of Larson who made a lot of acoustic instruments, and they made for brands like Prairie State, Stahl, Euphonon, Mauer, and they did that because they made great instruments, but they were going, we can't really compete with Gibson and Martin as far as the marketing branding side of it. So they worked with those companies. They were music stores. So this is one of those guitars. They made way more mandolins, way more harp guitars. They only made a few guitars.
Mandolins were a big deal back
then. They were. So were harp guitars and just a lot of crazy stuff because people were playing like mountain music and orchestral music that called for those.
Right, there were mandolin orchestras.
Yeah, the guitar like this was not something that caught on for a bit. So long story short with Larson Brothers is that during this period of time, everybody, Martin, Gibson, et cetera, were trying to come up with bracing that could support steel strings. And Larson, as far as I understand, was the first company to be able to get that patent.
Oh, really?
For steel strings.
Crack the code.
Yeah. So this is a guitar that they made. It's a 1935 Stahl Model 6. It looks very similar to, say, like a Martin OM-28.
Yeah.
Spruce top, Brazilian rosewood back and sides, ebony neck. But Gibson and Martin took a lot of ideas from the Larson brothers, as well as Larson brothers took from them. Everyone was sharing ideas or whatever you want to call it back then. But it's one of the best sounding guitars I've ever heard. Small bodies acoustic is probably the best. And there's only a few of them. I mean, there might be, I don't know, maybe 5 to 10. I'm not quite sure. But it's a really cool piece of history, because if you think about steel strings and guitars, that leads to blues and jazz. Oh, that leads to rock and roll in 50s. That leads to pop. So you can make the claim that this patent is all of modern music. It's a weird claim.
A bold claim.
Yes, it is. But yeah, they're made in Chicago by Candlelight, and wow. It's very cool. It's as good as it gets, man.
That's cool. Okay, I've never seen one.
They're very cool. As far as that, I'll swap this one. Another acoustic I use. Yeah, thanks, man.
There you go. You bet.
I take care of my guitar.
Yeah, now. Just put that. Promise. Put that very rare ancient guitar anywhere.
Yeah. Well, that's my Facebook Marketplace guitar. That's where I get that one.
Great.
But so this is a 1953 Southern Jumbo. My favorite Gibson acoustics fall in that 48 to 54 era.
Yeah.
They were just scalloping the bracing just right. They were making them just right. It's a great guitar. I don't know what tuning it's in. It's so warm. It's so mellow. It's so expressive.
Is that a Baggs pickup you have in it?
Yes. Yeah. So LR Baggs has been super good to me, man. This is the hi-fi. And something else real quick that I use live is the LR Baggs voice print. Essentially what this does, it's almost like how like a Kemper or something can model an amp.
Right.
But what it does is it analyzes your guitar and basically adds that to the signal with the pickup. So I have that. I've got a Martin that I've got one for, and a Mandocello I use live. And it sounds great, man. I'm not against modern things if it helps.
Yeah.
If it makes it better. And it certainly does. So us guitar players hate the way acoustics sound live.
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't sound like the guitar. They sound like the pickup. With what LR Baggs has, and with this specific pickup, the hi-fi, you can use that with any pickup, but these two together I really like, and I can use this live, and it sounds like a guitar. And acoustics music is such a big part of our show, so it's awesome, man.
So do you tour with this one?
Yeah, I do.
Good for you, man.
I do.
That's
that
great.
I tour with the 58 Martin double aught 17. I won't tour with stuff like that, but yeah, man, it's been playing. I tend to keep playing it.
Do you find when you're recording, do you just mic it, or do you ever use the pickup and the mic?
Yeah, I don't. We haven't gone with the pickup at all.
So you got a lot of great mics around here. So.
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Paul is stacked with mics. Yeah. But you know, I know people who do that. It introduces a unique tone. I haven't used it myself, but this guitar kind of speaks for itself in that way. But the LR Baggs allows it to speak live, and it's been a lifesaver on the road.
That's great.
Yeah, it's been
great. Okay, this has been fun, but I think you need to strap on your favorite rock machine,
okay.
And we'll talk about pedals and
man.
Stuff. Talk a little bit about your very modest pedal,
okay.
Not even a pedal board, you just got
a few
things scattered on the ground here. What are you running through?
Yeah, so I have a completely different looking live rig. My live rig, I have a Gig Rig G3 switcher. I do run some MIDI stuff for delays and reverbs, because I use so many different tones in the studio. I like to be able to have certain trails and repeats and stuff live.
Sure.
So that looks different. But yeah, I purposely did not bring my board, because I didn't want to just rely on those things that I'm used to live, because we've only been touring since September of 2024. We went out with a band called Dirty Honey. We've been out with Black Crows and ZZ Top and some other groups. But we've done, I think in that year and a half, is like 130 shows or something like that. So I'm really used to those sounds.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just be, not stuck, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I wanted to force myself to think about this. So I've used some various things, but I always have a Sonic Research Turbo Tuner. It's a, it's great. It's so accurate. The Peterson's, you know, just as good. But that's just what I've had for a long time. They're super accurate. I've been really getting into Mythos pedals.
Yeah.
I think they're here in town.
Are they? Are those okay? Yeah.
They make great stuff. I've been using the Luxury Drive. It's a boost. I used to use Overdrive pedals.
And that's Mephis.
Yeah. Yep. That's that one right there.
Okay.
I used to use,
like that one knob.
It's just there. It's not a clean boost. Yeah. It colors a tone, but it does that. It's a kind of really guttural thing and works with humbuckers really well. So live, I use that. I have a, I've brought out, not mine, I've borrowed a Klon before. I've had the RC Booster. I've had a lot of stuff, but I don't
Overdrive's use. Overdrive's like the hardest one to get right, right?
And that's what I found is that, you know, I love Overdrive pedals, but what they do for this group and these kind of songs that we're playing is I love when I can turn it up all the way and where I'm at there, because I use my volume knobs a ton for dynamics and bringing it back, clean up the tone for rhythm. What I didn't like were the rhythm tones when I would pull back, and they would almost sound a little bit like getting close to too hair metal-y.
Yeah.
Because I'm like live, I'll be using a on this last run, I had a 69 super bass and a 63 bassman, and those are pretty cooked. They're cooking up. So when you put an overdrive into it, that much more clipping, it's not pushing the amp more, it's adding a different kind of tonal clipping to it. It got me into that more 80s realm, which I love hair metal. I love Rat, I love Cinderella, I love
really?
All that stuff so much. Oh, dude, yes, for real. Tons of music I love, but I love those bands a lot. But it's not right for this. So I went to just using boosts and pushing those amps up more. And the way I do it live and in the studios, I strategically have different boosts that do different colors. So this one's just that nice kind of upper mids, like, I don't know how to explain it. You can hear in the guitars I've been playing how it reacts really well. But, so there's that. I've also got my friend Chris Vincent with R2R Electric. I don't know if you've heard of these.
I'm not familiar with them. But.
So he's out in L.A., but tons of folks are starting to use these, like a bunch of names. I think you guys just did something with with Henry.
Oh, right.
I don't know
yeah.
Henry, but
yeah.
I hear that we would be best friends if we met.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So he just did a signature one with these, but he has huge names using it. He has little guys using them. Little guys, I'm talking about me, like my height and stuff. But these are great. This is based off an old Hohner preamp that you would stick into your stereo in the 50s so you could plug your guitar into it.
Really?
So yeah, it's usually just one knob. This one has an EQ sweep and a little bit of a boost here and there. But this is great. Chris makes the most phenomenal stuff. I'm not just saying that because he's my buddy. Like it's great. So this one does something completely different than that one. You know, there's Klons lying around here at the studio. They do stuff completely different. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, so I also love a lot of 70s tones. Like one of my favorite albums is Rush's Fly By Night. And Alex's tones on that are so good, and the phaser tones of the 70s. So I've got, this is an early 80s electroharmonic small stone. I really like that for some reason. It's kind of closer to a Univibe in my opinion. So there's that.
Oh, I ought to hear that. Let's hear that.
Yeah, you want that?
Let's
okay.
Hear that. Oh, got it. Yeah.
Okay. Very
oh, yeah.
lush. Very
oh,
lush.
Yeah. Dreamy.
A little of that on there.
Oh, yeah. That's good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, these old pedals, man, I love new pedals. I'm talking about a lot of them, but there are some old pedals that just sit so well. That's what I like about it. I haven't used one on this record, but like an old EP3 or something, you can have the mix almost dimed on those, and they just sit so well. They're so musical. So that's what I like about old phasers is they're not so computerized sounding.
It's almost like the digital stuff to me has this high-end thing.
Yes.
That that I can't that I can't get rid of it, and I can't not hear it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are more reliable. It'll, yeah, oh, it's that sound for as long as you want.
Yeah.
If you get these old pedals, old guitars, old amps fixed up, they should be cool, but they are, you know.
Oh, they're, yeah, they're
glitchy.
They
can be iffy. Yeah. They can be iffy.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, so as far as, like, modulation and stuff, I've, this is, oh, like, a Script 74 Phase 90. It's great. A buddy of mine gave that to me. It's fantastic as well. Everyone knows what they sound like.
Oh yeah, no light. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You gotta, you gotta.
You know what it's on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Even when you don't want it.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Another one too. This is a lot lesser talked about one. Mine's all beat up.
Oh yeah.
But this is a Maestro. This was the first, like, mass produced phaser pedal.
They should have made it bigger. That was
their mistake. Yeah, they could have. And also, right here, I've got one. It came with a foot switch that's just as long and sits there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. But these sound really good. You hear these on all sorts of 70s records. I mentioned Alex Lyson. He used one. He had a little bit different one. But this is probably my favorite phaser sound as well. So that gets some use. They're noisy. You get this big old cable and crap.
They're expensive, noisy, impractical.
I know. I get the beat up one, so they're a little less. But
so gotta have it.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Yeah.
And also, I've just fallen in love again. My friend Mike Lapinto is a great resource, and in his insight for tone and just being on at the forefront of, like, what's going on has been really, really rewarding for me. But so that's another Mythos pedal, the Oracle.
Oracle, okay.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of ish based off, like, like the Bucker Brigade, kind of like a Boss DM2 ish thing. It does its own thing. It is a newer pedal that, again, sits super well. It's very musical sounding, and it's the only delay pedal I've used on this record at all.
Okay.
And yeah, I haven't used any tape delays or anything like that. I've just used it, and it's really inspiring. And, you know, when I'm doing overdubs, I'm switching guitars and amps all the time. And sometimes I just want to reach down and go, you know what, this, if I can't make this sound good, then I should probably just call it a day. And that sounds great. So it's always there. Other pedals stuff, I guess you can call this. This is an old Fender reverb tank.
Okay, yeah, tell me, Kay, this segues well into the amp world. So.
Yeah.
So tell me what's going, what amps are we hearing right now?
So we are hearing, in the other room, you can't see it, it's a 1965 Vox AC-15.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a twin, so it's got two 12-inch fanes, and that's the only year that I know of that had ceramic fanes in it.
Yeah. That's like a loud 15 watts. They're a surprisingly,
And what I like about having the fanes in there, and them being ceramic, it doesn't do the chimey Vox thing at all, but it does the rock Vox thing, like, perfectly well. Keith Nelson and Charlie Starr both agree with me that they're, like, the best little rock amps there are. When I told Charlie that I had one when I saw him, whenever it was last we were playing with him, he's like, I've got one, that's the best amp ever. And they're hard to find, but they sound super good, and it mixes very well with a lot of different amps. The other amp you're hearing is this is a 1969. I've got all this crap in the way, but a 1969 Super Bass. The input has been slightly modified, not for more gain or anything. Just the EQ is just a little bit different. A lot of folks like how bassy they can get. I feel like, especially with the kind of boost and stuff I use, it can kind of get a little too muddy, so it's just kind of like if there was like a high pass, just a slight high pass on it, but it sounds great. I take that on the road. I used to take the Vox out on the road a lot, and but now I've been taking, like I said, that 63 Bassman with that, and
yeah, cool.
Once I went the 2-amp route, I kind of screwed myself over because.
So are you always running 2 amps live?
Yeah, it's just dual mono.
In stereo, dual mono.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I've gone with like a wet dry thing before, but I just like both of them because amps react to delays and reverbs and boosts differently anyway.
Isn't that strange?
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another great thing about why, you know, again, being blessed with being around so much gear, being able to own a lot of it, is that I've dug in deep. I can put my head in it. I've ruined gear. I've fixed gear. But I really understand why these sound the way they sound or what it's going to do for me. So that's when, if you ever come to Smokestack, there's so much gear here. Yeah. But I brought the band's trailer worth of gear as well, just because I know that there's some stuff that I know is going to react this way, even if it's just for one sound.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the 2-amp thing has screwed me over because now I will not stop doing it for this band.
You guys are a loud band.
Yeah, I mean, we're not quiet, but we do have the experience in mind. And sometimes the experience, like a band like Dinosaur Jr., the experience is like that loud. That's what the experience is,
sure.
Like a big part of it at least.
Yeah.
Us, we try to keep the mix in mind. So my cabs are always turned to the back. I do use attenuators to a certain extent. We try to be good boys.
So on that Marshall, how hot are you running it? How much dirt is it without boosting the signal?
Yeah.
Like how dirty are you?
Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So you're a 2-amp guy. Up to this point, we've just been hearing the Vox.
Yeah.
But let's hear that Marshall, and then let's hear the awesome combination of the two together.
Sure. All right, so I'll do the Vox again. So this is no boost or anything.
Yeah, that's great.
So put them both in.
Just the Marshall now. Yeah, that's
pretty
angry.
Yeah. But they clean up real well too. But
yeah,
together. And then with a little boost.
Oh, yeah. Then put on that Oracle. I want to hear that too. I want to hear it all.
Heck yeah. I'll get all weird,
more,
man.
Oh, yeah. More is more. Great.
It's all fun.
Yeah. And I like the way you do that real, that slap back, kind of over the top. It's great.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's like one of my favorite things is messing with an old Echoplex and just messing with the speed and stuff. They're just, you could see why, I mean, for decades, even now, but back when those units came out, why music was exploding. People are so inspired.
Yeah,
these new things. It was like it's like almost when a new iPhone comes out, everyone freaks out. It's like well, it's a new pedal. Wow, what's a phaser? And,
right.
I'll try that.
You know?
So man, it's fun. It's cool. It's all inspiring, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But,
right.
You give it a go.
Hey, tell me about. I don't think we mentioned this little Pro.
Yeah, man.
Fender Pro. Tell me about this thing.
Yeah. So. It's a 1962 Pro.
Cool.
Fender
I love
Pro.
They painted it black. That's
yeah,
great.
Exactly. Like, yeah, we were talking about it earlier. I think a lot of times, you know, this is the era where it's brown Tolex.
Yeah.
And I think people saw their buddy down the street on Christmas, like, wow, he's got a black one. I want one of those because it's new.
Yeah.
And so they spray painted. I've seen Tweed stuff spray painted black.
Kenny Greenberg has an old Tweed that was painted black.
Ugliest
ever. Sounds amazing.
But yeah, man, the brown era and the blonde era as well, they're pretty related. They do a completely different thing.
Oh, and the tremolo on that is
probably
amazing.
Yeah, it's got
amazing.
The harmonic tremolo.
Right.
It sounds amazing. And
the 15. Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So the great thing about these two is it's just a speaker in and out. It's not hardwired. So I put that into a 412 a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people do know about this, but also don't, is early Marshalls were based off of a Tweed basement a lot.
Yeah.
But really, when Pete Townsend walked into Jim Marshall's store and he said, well, what can I help you with? Like, and Pete Townsend said, I need you to make this amp 10 times louder. It was a Brown Face Pro.
Huh.
So I'm not saying that was the amp that inspired Marshall, but it is the amp that inspired Marshall to make the 8x12 stack.
Right.
The Who's roadies got tired of it. They cut it in half, and that's where we get our classic stack.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great.
But if you plug it into a 412, it's like, man, that's what a lot of Marshalls want to sound like.
Well, in the Pro, in the like the 64 Pro, mm-hmm. is essentially a Vibroverb, you know?
Yeah.
It's a 15, yep. It's a 40 watt with a 15.
Yeah, a lot of Fender amps were, you know, they had them in series. I think this was called the Professional Series. So in this series, you have the Pro, the Super, and the Bandmaster.
Right.
And they're all really similar circuits with different speaker configurations, which, as you know, can make it a different amp completely.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a great amp, man. I've had it, and I love it, man.
Yeah.
I bought it broke. I pretty much buy all my stuff broke and got it fixed
up. That's the best deal, right?
You buy it and you're like, oh man, this may not work someday.
But right.
This one did. I'm glad.
You roll the dice, sometimes you
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly. Exactly, man.
Well, man, thank you so much for taking us through your rig. And I can't wait to hear this record. When are you guys going to wrap this thing?
We're finishing it up this week. And the record itself will probably be late spring, early summer. And we've got a lot of stuff planned. And for being such a new band, we're really blessed to be in the position we are and that people are digging it and that we're getting some attention and doing stuff like this and hanging out. And
yeah.
I've been watching Rig Rundown since I started to play, man. So
well,
it's very cool
thank
to be a
you
part
for
of
that.
It. Yeah, man.
Well, hey, the band Feel, they're coming out to you soon and the record's out soon. So keeping rock alive.
Excellent.
Do we give the horns? I don't know. What do we do?
I don't know. Keep it. Whatnot. Yeah. Thumbs up.